Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
La-di-da, la-di-da.
He's looking at you, kid.
Let's put a smile on that face.
Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
It's midday at the movies. I'm Tom Hall. As Anne Hornaday of the Washington Post notes in recent essays, these days, theaters are filled with films telling the stories of African Americans and strong women. Is this a coincidence or a consequence of the Oscars So Black and Me Too movements? The Golden Globe nominations were announced this morning. We'll talk about it with Anne and Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Anastasia at Baltimore's Hippodrome Theater. Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome. It's midday at the movies. I'm Tom Hall, joined in studio by two of the finest guests in the history of radio guesting, ladies and gentlemen. Jed Dietz of the Maryland Film Festival and Anne Hornaday, the film critic for the Washington Post. When they write the history of this medium, the chapter about radio guests, you guys will be first there. There'll be pictures of Jed with hair. It'll be very interesting. It'll be fun. It'll be fun to read. So I appreciate, as always, you guys coming by on the first Thursday of the month. The Golden Globes were, the nominations for the Golden Globes were announced earlier this morning in La La Land, so we can chat a little bit about that. But Anne, I want to start with a couple of essays that you wrote in the Post in the last week or so. One is about this wonderful preponderance of movies about African Americans that happened to be like bunched up in theaters over these past couple of months. It's quite something, and it's unusual, isn't it?
Well, I hope it's not unusual. I hope this is just
used to be
I
unusual.
Hope, yeah, but sure. You know, this is what I want. This is what I want the year to look like. I mean, this is the norm, and as far as I'm concerned, it is, and everything else is the anomaly. But you know, it started with Black Panther. You know, that just sort of astonished everybody and took the year by storm, and then. To that, we got, you know, Blindspotting. We got Sorry to Bother You. We got Black Klansman. And in the midst of this, we're getting Denzel Washington in The Equalizer in a role that's race neutral, that anybody, you know, they could have cast anyone. They cast him. Then we saw Crazy Rich Asians, blockbuster. And then we see John Cho in Searching, another race neutral role that went to an Asian American actor, an actor of Asian descent. And now on into the fall, we have Green Book. We're going to have If Beale Street Could Talk. We have Widows. A really variegated spectrum of genres and styles and tones and storytelling and types of stories. And to me, this is exactly what when we say inclusiveness and diversity, this is what I have in my mind is what we want.
I
think and we're seeing it reflected in those Golden Globe nominations. The AFI Awards were announced this week. We saw it reflected there. So it's very encouraging.
Yeah, Best Motion Picture for a Drama in the Golden Globes nominated Black Panther, Black Klansman, and If Beale Street Could Talk.
Yeah. Three out of the five.
Along with Bohemian Rhapsody and Star is Born. So, Jed, I mean, is it the studios sort of finally waking up to the fact that so-called, quote-unquote, black movies have certainly wide appeal, and they can make money on these things? Plus, I mean, to say nothing of the fact that so many of these movies are really good movies.
All of that's true, and I think, you want to go back and give a little nod to Tyler Perry, who in a very niche way, both first on stage and then in movies, started to wake people up and say, oh, there's real money here. And then I would point out to this way that Anne's identified, really starting with Get Out, which is a completely surprise hit, sort of, you know, horror, comedy, but very much about race. And I think this...
A directorial debut for Jordan Peele.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And as these things started to really get traction and make money on their own terms, in Hollywood terms, against any bar you want to establish, the world changed. And I think Anne's exactly right. I think it's changed for good. We've got a little film at the Parkway called Tyrell, which interestingly enough was did not come out of this tradition in any direct way, but it's sort of the Get Out thing, which is talking about race in this very sort of subtle, slightly evolved, younger people way, but the real tension and real issues that are still around. So because those the themes plot, can be there, it can also be race neutral.
Yeah, the plot of Tyrell, I guess, centers around there's one black guy in a like a white fraternity or something.
It's a party that you're going out for a weekend. He knows one of the white guys. The rest of them he doesn't know. His name is actually Tyler. So the name of the movie, he gets called Tyrell a couple times, and it's that sort of expresses the whole tension that's built into this situation. Michael Cera's in it. It's made by a Chilean, not an American filmmaker. Sebastian Silva was at Sundance and continues. I just think Anne's got it exactly right. I think we're at a point in the movie world evolving in a very, very interesting way in discussions about race.
Well, and I also think it's a function, you know, for the longest time we've been told as film goers, you go see that movie, but you'll never see that movie about that person because they don't look like you. And it's always been a lie. And finally, I think these are proof of concept that we've been lied to.
Yeah.
And that we will all see movies, and to your point, Tom, when they're good. And these are all really, the execution level has been very high with all of them. And that counts. You know, that means something, and that's important. But yeah, I just think a lot of these false binaries and false divisions are breaking down in terms of just pure audience expectation and audience experience and demand.
And when it comes to Black Panther, it seems to me that this is another example of how Black Panther is kind of sui generis in so many ways, because that's a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very unusual for superhero movies to be in that best drama category.
You're right. Right? Yeah. That's true. I think it might even be the first time.
I think it's the first movie in that genre to land a nod for best drama at the Golden Globes.
And it's interesting. I just happened, John Krasinski, who directed A Quiet Place, which was another sort of surprise success earlier in the year, was in Washington yesterday, and we talked for a few minutes. Mm. And we were talking about that very notion of that the whole notion of what's an awards picture and what is prestige is also breaking down with these genre exercises like Black Panther, like A Quiet Place, which is quote unquote horror and a genre exercise, but really elevates the form in terms of the technique and the storytelling and the emotion. So these false sort of like you can do this, but you can't do that. It's all blurring in a great way, but I do think execution is key. I just think as long as these things are being made at a high level and cast at a high level, then they're going to continue to kind of push these boundaries in really healthy ways.
And listeners, if you'd like to weigh in, let us know what your favorite movies of the year have been. The award season is off and running with the announcement of the nominations for the Golden Globes today. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. You can drop us a tweet as well, @MiddayWYPR. Let's play a little clip from this new movie that I can't wait to see. It's called Green Book, and then we'll chat about it on the other side.
Dear Dolores, D-E-A-R, this is an animal. As I'm writing this letter, I'm eating potato chips, and I'm starting to get thirsty. And you know this is pathetic, right? Tell me what you're trying to say.
I don't know. Yeah, I miss her.
Then say that. But do it in a manner that no one else has ever done it before. Something like, put this down. Falling in love with you was the easiest thing I've ever done.
Nothing matters to me but you. And every day I'm alive, I'm aware of this. I loved you the day I met you. I love you today. And I will love you the rest of my life. So can I put a P.S. kiss the kids?
A P.S.?
Yeah, like at the end.
That's like clinging a cowbell at the end of Shostakovich's The Seventh.
Right. That's good.
It's perfect, Tony.
I've clung a couple of cowbells at the end of Shasta
more
Carter.
Cowbell,
so, more
right?
cowbell. All right, so for folks who don't know the premise of this movie, I should have told you this before we listened to that clip, but there's a working class Italian American bouncer, this guy named Tony the Lip Vallinaga, who's played by Viggo Mortensen, and he becomes the driver for this very erudite Jamaican-American classical pianist who's booked to play a series of concerts in the Deep South in the 1960s. That's played by Marshall Ali. This is a true story. And so the pianist is helping this this Goomba guy from Italy, you know, who's there as his protector, write a love letter. I can't wait to see this movie, Anne. Am I going to be disappointed or thrilled?
I hope not. I fell for this like a ton of bricks. I saw this at in a packed house at the Middleburg Film Festival. It was the last day of the festival, and it was one of those experiences where you have you're with an audience, and they start to, as you heard, it's full of humor. And so once the humor kind of kicks in and these characters come to life, you just go along with them. And it just the room levitated. I mean, I've never been in such a joyful auditorium in a really long time. I think on paper, this looks like such a cringe-worthy exercise in kind of that old school white liberal form of filmmaking about like a heartwarming tale about racism and overcoming it, you know, through friendship. And it is. But these performances by Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali really transcend all of those traps. And I just think the simplicity of it and the fact that it is grounded in these men's real relationship really saves it from a lot of those pitfalls that it could have fallen into.
And it's based on a true story. That's what I mean.
It's grounded.
Yeah. And Mahershala Ali plays this musician I'd never heard of before, Don Shirley.
Oh, the music. P.S. The music is exquisite in this film.
And he sets out to tour rural and specifically southern towns where he knows there will be racial issues. So he hires this white driver who he then educates. That's that clip you played where he helps him write letters home. And he goes through this period and geography of America that, is extraordinary. And they teach each other, these two guys. And as Anne said, that's a trope, you think, oh my God, can this work? It's really fun.
Yeah.
And
interesting.
And directed, the two of them are really great.
And directed by Peter Farrelly, who did Dumb and Dumber. You just don't think of a really significant, poignant movie coming out of the same brain that made Dumb and Dumber.
No, and the thing that I like the most about Farrelly's direction is that I have been hard on him in the past for not caring. I mean, his movies have never been visually beautiful. They've actually been really ugly. I mean, I don't think he's ever cared that much about lighting or cinematography or composition, but this is a really nice looking movie. I mean, it's rich, the colors are rich, the tone is warm. I mean, it's sort of delicious to watch. Like I said, the music, both the music that Shirley plays and also the score by Chris Bowers is absolutely magnificent.
Yep.
So you're just kind of enveloped in this sensory experience that is fun and warm and beautiful and meaningful. I don't know. I just can't say enough about it. It's
and
really
our director and
film.
Engineer, Luke Spicknell, reminds us that Dumb and Dumber is a masterpiece.
Well.
And it's kind of like, and this is another Christmas tradition that we have here at Midday in the December edition of Midday at the Movies. We need to talk about the cinematic masterpiece that is Love Actually as a holiday film. So, of course, I have asserted for years that it is an absolute cinematic masterpiece. I mean, it's like Citizen Kane, Love Actually, and then I can't think of a third one, you know?
I think you and Chris Matthews would have a great little bromance date. You know?
Because he likes Love Actually?
Any chance he gets, he talks about Love Actually.
Well, I just, you know, here's my reason this year.
We need a
Here's reason number 18, and that it promotes literacy.
Well,
because at the end of the movie, as I recall, and I really don't remember anything about the movie. But at the end of the movie, someone stands out in front of the guy's or the woman's house with note cards, with cards, right? Like they're like
Bob Dylan called. He'd like to have his idea back. But.
And he shows the cards. And so when you're watching the movie, you're forced to practice your reading. So
this
how
is
many
true.
Movies
I
do
can't
that?
Argue with right.
I mean, so that's this year's reason. So, and I guess it will not be playing as an extended run at the Parkway Theater, Jeff.
No, we have lots of Christmas movies that didn't really make
that didn't
the cut,
make the
though,
list.
No,
yeah.
But a whole variety of them coming.
Well, you just lost the Chris Matthews vote, so it's not going to be driving up
all right.
anytime
We're
soon.
We're going to take a break, and then when we come back, I want to talk about this movie, The Favorite, which is one about one of the movies that you mentioned, Anne, in your other essay that I'm intrigued by, about the powerful women that are being portrayed in movies. So we will be right back with Anne Hornaday. She is the film critic of The Washington Post. Her latest book is called Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. It's now available in paperback, stocking stuffer size. Jed Dietz is the founder and director of the Maryland Film Festival. Our number at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday WYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
This is your public radio, 88.1 WYPR, where you're listening to Midday at the Movies.
And welcome back. It's Midday at the Movies. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday News Wrap. I'll be joined by Devlin Barrett. He's a national security reporter for The Washington Post and NPR's political editor, Domenico Montanaro. We'll have an update on the Mueller investigation into Russian meddling in the 2016 election. Various court filings this week have given us something of a peek into where that investigation stands. So we will try to read those tea leaves. Plus, the Senate, including some Senate Republicans, appears to be breaking with the Trump administration over the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, the journalist for The Washington Post. We'll take a look behind all of the headlines from this week tomorrow on Midday. Plus, the singer-songwriter Sonia Disappear Fear will join me right here in Studio A. She's going to play a couple of tunes from her new album. So I hope you can join us tomorrow. If you've just joined us today, it is Midday at the Movies with Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, the film critic of The Washington Post. Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. If you like Love Actually is a Movie, I will accept your call. Your email here, midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle, @midday WYPR. So, Anne, another essay that you wrote was kind of like about a lot of movies about powerful women and in some cases very unlikable women.
Yeah, not exactly your
and so this is becoming a thing too, you know. So and one of the movies you make mention of is this thing called The Favorite. Tell us a little bit about that movie.
Yeah, The Favorite is a fascinating semi-revisionist, but not as revisionist as you might think, history of 18th century England, the reign of Queen Anne, who had a tragic life, lost several children, was riddled with illness and pain and suffering. And it is about this real-life triangle that developed between her best friend, Lady Sarah Churchill, played by Rachel Weisz, and kind of an interloper named Abigail Hall. I think that was her last name, Abigail Hall, played by Emma Stone, this sort of young interloper who wants to get in between the two besties and wend her way in and gain power and prestige and wealth. Olivia Colman, who we're going to see soon as Queen Elizabeth in the new season of The Crown, just is masterful as Queen Anne, as this kind of, you know, tyrannical but really touching and poignant figure. It's satirical, it's cruel, it's cutting. It has many modern-day resonances in terms of the pettiness of leadership and fragile egos and power. It's lusty, it's vulgar, anachronistic in fascinating ways. It's a lot of fun to watch.
In your piece, you said, more cynical than the bleakest House of Cards episode with twice as many deliciously nasty zingers.
Oh, well, then I guess I agree with myself. But it is, it really is, absolutely cuts you to the quick. But if that's your cup, I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Let's listen to a little clip. In this scene, the queen has just had her face made up by the new servant. It's ahead of an important diplomatic meeting, and Lady Sarah evidently does not approve.
I'm ready for the Russian ambassador.
Who did your makeup?
We went for something dramatic. Do you like it?
You look like a badger.
Oh.
Are you going to cry?
Really?
Well, what do you think you look like?
Badger.
Do you really think you can meet the Russian delegation looking like that?
No. I will manage it. Go back to your rooms.
Thank you. Did you just look at me? Did you? Look at me! Look at me! How dare you! Close your eyes!
I can say from my own personal experience, the number of times I have said to someone, you look like a badger, is directly proportional to the number of times I regret saying to someone, you look like a badger. So, but, you know, that's this is really interesting because, you know, Anne mentions in her piece, Suspira, a movie about women, The Widows with Viola Davis, you know, that's just come out. Emily Blunt in A Quiet Place. Mm-hmm. Jamie Lee Curtis back in Halloween. Melissa McCarthy in that thing about the writer. Can you ever forgive me?
So I mean,
this is kind of a thing, isn't it? These women who are not necessarily particularly sympathetic, but you're riveted to them.
All of that's true, and I think that they hold you is what's so important about this, because I think being able to do both those things is where the real intrigue is. There's this great line that I've heard actresses talk about, you know, you choose the thing, not that you should do, but that you want to do in a scene, that the character would want to do. And these women choose things they want to do in a very purposeful way. And it's intriguing and incredibly fresh.
Our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. If you want to weigh in on what your favorite movies of the year have been, our email, midday@wypr.org, our Twitter handle, @MiddayWYPR. It's Midday at the Movies with Anne Hornaday, The Washington Post, and Jed Dietz, the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Let's talk about a couple of things that are on the list for the Golden Globes. Mm. We mentioned the Best Motion Picture. Mm. Best Actress, we've got Glenn Close, Lady Gaga, Nicole Kidman, Melissa McCarthy, and Rosamund Pike. Mm. First of all, in general, do you guys think that the Golden Globes are predictive in any way for the other awards that are going to come out, and you know, particularly the Oscars? I mean, do people start reading tea leaves about what we're going to be seeing, you know, in late February at the Oscars once the Golden Globes are announced?
I do think there's a natural overlap in terms of nominations, but these are two utterly different and distinct organizations. I don't think there's any overlap in terms of membership. So you're talking about just very different people.
Because Golden Globes does TV and all
that.
Yeah,
it's not
the just
Foreign
movies.
Press Association. And the Academy is film professionals and, you know, practitioners. I mean, I think there's some publicists in the Academy, but I don't think there are any journalists, as far as I know. I'm not sure there's ever been any critic. Maybe Ebert might have been a member. But so you're talking about very different constituencies and very different lenses through which they are looking at this work, but inevitably you're going to see these titles crop up. You know, I do think this is sort of, there is a certain degree of momentum being developed between, you know, we saw it with the Gotham Awards and then this week's AFI Awards and this, you know, you do kind of sense things coalescing around certain movies.
Yeah. So, Jed, in the Best Actor category, Bradley Cooper, he's directed and starred in A Star is Born, Willem Dafoe, Lucas Hedges, Rami Malek, he was in Anne's favorite movie, Bohemian Rhapsody, and John David Washington in Black Klansman. So when you look at that list of best actresses and best actors, does it jump out at you that, you know, a member of the Foreign Press Association would have a different, you know, a different perspective, a different take than a member of the Academy?
So, no, it doesn't. I mean, I think Anne's exactly right. There's sort of a coalescing of opinion across the board with the public, too. And it'll shift around a little bit as more information comes out and people see. And there's still a few movies still to be released, of course. It is, I mean, one thing to point out, from what Anne said about the Golden Globes, is the Hollywood Foreign Press Association splits these categories. So those two categories you mentioned are just drama, and then
they also went for comedy,
musical, and comedy.
And musical, mm-hmm.
And they've got Vice, this film that I haven't seen yet on Dick Cheney.
That's the Adam McKay biopic about Dick Cheney.
Yeah,
right.
That's in the musical or comedy category. I don't know. Why is there's some debates always about whether it's good to split that category. The Academy itself has talked about, you know, changing up categories.
Well, they had a short-lived category of most popular or something, right?
And then they
decided to, maybe that wasn't such a great idea.
Yeah, there was an immediate outcry. And I think this loops back to our earlier discussion about Black Panther and Quiet Place. You know, those were popular movies, and they were also artistically and technically at the top of the heap. So then why make the distinction? You know, why put an asterisk by something? If it's good, it's good. If it's art, it's art. And, you know, there's no reason why these shouldn't be in that running.
So it's musical or comedy is the category. Best motion picture. Crazy Rich Asians, The Favorite, which we just talked about, The Green Book, which we've talked about today. Mary Poppins returns. That's Emily Blunt, right?
Right.
Is the new Mary Poppins.
Yes, the new one.
And then Vice, this Dick Cheney biopic. So I don't know. Black Panther is in the best motion picture as a drama.
Yeah.
You know, and Black Klansman is also as a drama. Yes. Bohemian Rhapsody as a drama. Star is Born as a drama. So these other things, I guess Vice is a musical or a comedy?
Vice, they're calling it would be a comedy because there's no music in it.
Right.
But and it does have it's a I guess you could say it's a satire. You know, I mean, I think you can defend that. So, but you know, it is, they do slice and dice these in different ways. I mean, some people have been saying, well, how are Bohemian Rhapsody and Star is Born not musicals? And then it gets into, how do you define a musical? You know, just because it has a lot of music in it, to me, doesn't mean it's a musical.
Right.
You know, musicals mean songs are taking the place of some kind of an emotional, you know, expression that needs to get out. But anyway, it's all fun to debate. But I mean, I do think some people have been overlooked. I mean, I do think we're going to see some movement. Like a surprise to me was Lucas Hedges being nominated, and not an Ethan Hawke for First Reformed. I do think Ethan Hawke probably still will be. I think he's.
So Lucas Hedges is nominated for a movie called Boy Erased, which is playing around town. It's in it's at the Charles Theater. What's your take on that movie, Anne? You've seen it.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting movie. It's a fact-based drama about a young man who was put into quote-unquote gay conversion therapy by his parents and just had a horrible experience. And it's sort of about his relationship, especially with his mom, and how they come through that, both as a mother and a son and also as a family. You know, it's very worthy. I mean, I think I kind of put, there's a big basket of these movies this year, like Beautiful Boy, Boy Erased, Ben is Back, these kind of, I guess there are these days problem pictures, you know, these are these social issues, The Miseducation of Cameron Post would be in there. You know, there's, these are all kind of tackling issues, quote unquote, through these domestic dramas. But like I said, I think that there's a couple of swings in here that could go, you know, I still am rooting for Ethan Hawke
to
have his moment for First Reformed. I'm sorry.
First Reformed,
Yeah.
You had that at the film festival, I guess, right?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, and that's where I saw it, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was an incredible movie. Very powerful.
And an unbelievable performance.
But Jed, how about you? Anything, you know, jump out at you for either the best actor categories, best actress, or best movies?
No, I think a lot of this is, you know, pretty much predictable, and sort of what we're hearing coming through as we come out of the fall festivals and into awards season. So I think we're.
I do think. I mean, Bohemian Rhapsody is the outlier, just because it's not a great movie. It's a fun movie. It's a thoroughly entertaining one. But I don't think that, in terms of artistic merit or technical merit, I'm not sure that it would make a cut with professionals. You know, I think they'd be very aware of its shortfalls. Whereas maybe the foreign press is a little bit more susceptible, you know, willing to just say, we loved it, you know, and that's all that we need to do is love it.
Yeah.
So I could see that slot getting, you know, I would like to see maybe a First Reformed or a Roma. They put Roma in their foreign language category. Mm-hmm. I would put that just in best picture.
I want to talk about that in a minute. But first, I want to relate to you one of our most erudite and learned listeners, Oren in Baltimore, sends an email. It says, I love Love Actually. Perfect flick to take the night, make some cookies and hot chocolate, and hold your sweetie's hand.
Oren.
And Oren also says, on the opposite spectrum, my favorite movie of the year was Mandy with Nicolas Cage.
Oren, you're a very interesting person.
A phantasmagoric triumph that blew away box office expectations and will go down in cult history. It was a pure feast for the eyes and ears. That's like
that
the super duper violent horror.
Yeah, Nick Cage and
chopping up a lot of people.
And it was. We've talked about it briefly, but I just repeat it quickly. So it was released into movie theaters. We had it at the Parkway and was on demand. And that is a no-no. Everybody says you can't do that. And lo and behold, they did it and it worked. And they made money in both categories. And we had people walking past whatever their screen on their couch was to get to the Parkway to see it. And people had a great experience.
All right. Well, Oren, we appreciate that. And our director and engineer, Luke Spicknall, is giving high fives.
He's
to,
just all
to
high
Oren
fives
about
over
that.
There.
He's high fives about
you guys
a lot
are
of stuff today.
Fascinating.
A listener in Towson wants to know what happened to First Man.
And I worry about
how could it have been ignored except for the musical score, which was great, but the performances were extraordinary.
Agreed.
So,
I know.
First
yeah.
Man.
I know.
That's the thing about Neil Armstrong.
Yes,
Neil Armstrong.
Neil
Armstrong.
Yes, with Ryan Gosling. I was just about ready to say that's the other one that I just feel like it's getting lopped off a lot of these lists. And my feeling, you know, having just done my top 10 and I'm on a few of these selection committees and juries and things, is that it's number 11. You know what I mean? Like, I think we all admired it greatly. It's a fantastic piece of filmmaking. It's a fantastic performance by Ryan Gosling. Not everything can make that final cut.
But about a character who's very cold.
True.
I mean, that's part of the nature. I found the whole film fascinating.
I did too.
And Damien Chazelle, who did La La Land, a completely different kind of movie, you know, with Ryan Gosling also in a completely different kind of role. And I think it's a magnificent piece of work, but it just
too.
Didn't.
Yeah. It
get
didn't
traction.
Connect. It didn't connect.
And it's interesting. Bradley Cooper nominated by the Golden Globes for Best Director, his first directing thing, Star is Born. See, Bradley Cooper and Ryan Gosling, I always mix up. Those are interchangeable people.
Blue, it's the blue eyes. You're just mesmerized by those blue eyes.
All these white people look the same to me. But I do want to talk about Roma. That's going to drop on Netflix next week.
Correct.
Right. By the way. For those of you who know what I'm talking about, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel has now dropped on Amazon.
So, yesterday.
So that's where we'll find you.
So that's where you will find me.
Pasted
absolutely.
To that.
I am pasted to Are that bad boy. I love the first season of that. Anyway, but that's it. I digress. Roma. Tell me about Roma.
Roma is a masterpiece. That's all I can... Roma is a great work of art by, I think, our greatest living filmmaker, Alfonso Cuarón. It's deeply, you know, he's the guy that brought us Gravity, Children of Men, E Tu Mama Tambien, The Little Princess, Prisoner of Azkaban, the Harry Potter movie. I mean, he is sort of the, I compare him to William Wyler. I just think he's the great yeoman of our time and the great technician. He just has great fluency with this medium. He can pretty much do anything. And then not just technique-wise, but infuse it with values and humanism. But this really is his most personal film since E Tu Mama. It's a reminiscence of his time growing up in Mexico City in the 70s. The particular chapter is when his own parents were breaking up. But the story's really told sort of through, not through the eyes so much, as just through the privileging of the family nanny. In the movie, her name is Cleo. And it just sort of follows her, you know, during this period of her life that's just as tumultuous as it is for Cuarón's character, but for different reasons. And again, like Green Book, you kind of think, oh, God, this, you know, privileged, rich filmmaker going back and delivering a sentimental, you know, Madeleine to his childhood nanny. Ick. But he just gives it such majesty and dignity and beauty and groundedness. It's just an exquisite movie.
Let's go to the phones to Dave in Baltimore. Dave, welcome to Midday with Jed Dietz and Ann Hornaday.
Hi, thanks so much. It's always a wonderful show with these guests. Are these movies too controversial? I mean, talk about refreshing. I'm thinking, one, of Get Out on racism, and two, Orange is the New Black. You don't see women like that in movies.
All right, thanks for that comment. Orange is the New Black, of course, isn't in theatrical release. It's a series on Netflix. But this is, you know, about a bunch of women in prison. And then Dave's a fan of Get Out as a refreshing take on racism. And, you know, a lot of people agree with Dave on that, to be sure.
I agree with him. These pieces of work, of course, will exist on small screens and big screens. And I frankly think it's always better to be in a movie theater to see a movie or to see any of these works, just because I love the small screens. But I think he's right about the art form, as Anna said. I think when things are made well, then they'll find their way into the theaters. And as we just said with Mandy, a completely different kind of movie. Mm-hmm. They can play in both places. I think, you know, anybody makes up a rule saying they can't, just we're too early in that discussion to really.
By the way, here's it's what is it, the 6th of December, the 7th, the 6th of December, right? Is it true that this year there don't seem to be any big blockbuster holiday movies?
Yeah,
I was just talking
about that. We have The Grinch.
What's the deal with that?
Well, you know, it's weird because I think in recent years we've had a lot of Star Wars movies come out right around like in November, December. This year, I think it's Mary Poppins. I mean, I think that is that's the one that's going to count, even though it doesn't really have a holiday theme. And it's not nominally about holidays or thematically, but I think that's what they're intending to.
For sure.
But we have a Grinch movie, but you're right. I mean, it's more, we have a lot of, like, we have Aquaman, which, you know, doesn't exactly say holidays to me. I mean, I would put Green Book in that category as a movie that when you're with your family at the holidays and you're looking for a movie to go to, Green Book's perfect, you know, because you can, it's like, I felt the same way about Hidden Figures. You know, you can take pretty much any age and everyone will have a great time at that movie. It's mm-hmm. just, it's an all-rounder.
And you've got some holiday movies that you're screening at the Parkway, Jed. You've got Santa Claus, you've got Jingle All the Way, you've got The Nightmare Before Christmas, right. And you've also got Eyes Wide Shut,
yes.
which is not exactly a holiday
again,
thing. That is not
it's
a rom-com ramp through.
Starts at a Christmas party.
There's a party.
Yeah,
there's
which ends in an orgy, for God's sake. I mean, it's the holidays. Can't we take a break from that stuff for a little while? But this is part of the Kubrick
thing,
right?
It is part of the Kubrick.
So you've had a whole series. You've shown every flick that Mr. Kubrick, Stanley Kubrick made.
We will have by the end of the year. Barry Lyndon is actually the last one. And Leonard Vitale, who was in Barry Lyndon and then spent the whole rest of his life.
Leon Vitale, sorry.
It will be here for screenings of Barry Lyndon. So that's a must. I mean, this guy worked with Kubrick for years and years. And a great film that we showed at the Parkway, a documentary about him called Film Worker, was also made. And it's an extraordinary story, and he's an amazing guy. And Barry Lyndon's an amazing movie. So come see him.
Can we talk a little bit about The Ballad of Buster Scruggs?
Yeah.
That's the Coen Brothers movie, which Linnell and I saw last weekend at home. We didn't go to a theater. I'm sorry about that, Jed.
That's right.
You know, it's a series of stories that don't appear to be interrelated at all in the Wild, Wild West. I thought it started, I liked the first one, then the second one didn't do much for me. We actually turned it off and tried something else. And then we came back, and we were glad that we came back because it ended strong. That was our take on it.
It has a cumulative effect. I agree. I mean, I was thinking it was one of their little sort of bagatelles. It reminds me a little bit. I was a big Hail Caesar fan. I love that movie as well. But it reminded me a little bit of an outtake from that. Like, clearly they're interested in genre and period and those Hollywood tropes. And so it kind of felt like them stretching out on one of those. But then it does have this cumulative power and meaning, and it becomes much more emotional than you think it's going to be. And again, I just have to say, another stellar Carter Burwell score. I mean, the music is just magnificent.
And beautifully shot.
Beautifully shot. Every, you know, like, other than Cuaron, I mean, I think just on pure technique, these guys are incapable of making a bad step.
I think it's structured more for the smaller screens because of what you just said, the episodic nature.
Because their deal was with Netflix.
I think you're right.
So it was a Netflix deal.
But I think it looks... It is so good looking, you should see it on the biggest screen you can get to. And I thought the later stories that I didn't think worked so well in the pattern, but I think to do it the way you and Linnell did it is exactly right. Mm. I thought that segment with Liam Neeson and this guy just...
The meal ticket.
Yeah, and just talking about, just reciting... parts of the Gettysburg Address, parts of, you know, well-written documents. As a piece of entertainment in the Old West, the notion of that was so interesting to me. And the way they built that whole story, there's a little thing at the end that was great. I thought the Zoe Kazan, the wagon train stuff was great.
Tom Waits is the prospector.
But they're all sort of independent.
It's incredible.
And I think in a way it's better to do what you did with that.
Well, we're out of time, but I do want to give a shout out to Joe Trapea, who has a movie called Sickies Making Films. That's also going to be at the Parkway for a few.
And we're
showing
a bunch of banned films around it, too.
And this is about movies that were banned, particularly in Baltimore. I mean,
yes.
It's a very
Maryland. It was the last censorship was in Maryland.
The censorship board was here in Maryland. So good luck to Joe with that movie. Well, it's good to see you both. Happy holidays. Thank you for coming in. And
same
we will
you.
See you in the new year.
Indeed.
All right. Anne Hornaday is the film critic for The Washington Post. She is the author of Talking Pictures, How to Watch Movies. Jed Dietz is the founding director of the Maryland Film Festival. Coming up after a quick break, theater critic J. Wynn Russick is here with her weekly review. We are headed to the Hippodrome when we come back. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR.